Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to Whiplash Talk. This is Sunshine, your host. I am here today with someone very, very special that I wanted to share with you as our listening audience. I know on Whiplash Talk, a lot of times in the past, we've talked about things that have caused me to go, whiplash, what just happened? And when I was working with J.J. Carroll, I ran across Dr. Juliet Engel, and I said, J.J., you have got to put me in touch with her. She has got a message and a purpose that she is doing out there. She's taking lemons and made lemonades, and she has definitely had a whiplash of a life. And I really wanted her on the show. And so, Dr. Juliet, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I know when JJ and I were talking, we talked a lot about child trafficking and we talked a lot about borders and et cetera and so forth. But your story really crosses over a lot. We can start with your background of where you came out of as a child, but really going into more the Underground Railroad work that you're doing and that kind of work. So if we just start just a little bit. I know that you probably share a lot about this, but can you share a little bit about the MKUltra program and Project Monarch, a little bit about that and how you came out of that?
Well, first of all, I got into it. My father sold me into the MKUltra program called Monarch when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And what Monarch is, it's a program in the MKUltra, which I hope you've all heard about by now, is the program which came from the Hitler Himmler Nazi psychological psyops group of the Nazis. And these were programs that were developed in the 1930s and then really, really honed while the Nazis had unlimited access to all kinds of people in the concentration camps. And the Nuremberg trials, I had my uncle and five of his close relatives, all German speakers, were at Nuremberg working for the OSS, which became the CIA and also the NSA. And those scientists were supposedly executed, but they weren't executed. They were brought to the United States. Over 1,500 of the psyops scientists were brought to the United States. I don't know how many thousands of anyone they thought would be useful in any kind of a CIA-sponsored program was brought to the United States. They were also taken to Great Britain and to Russia. So this talent pool of extreme sadistic psyop monsters was divided up and very happily brought to our country, given new identities, given high paychecks. And then it looks like each of the families of the high-level people that started the CIA, that were in the State Department, the Dulles brothers, the people that were running secret technical services for the OSS during the war, they all put their children, their eldest children, into the program. And that's how I got there. My uncle was one of the founders of the NSA. That vein runs deep in my family. Plus, they were Templars, they were Shriners, they were high level. My great grandfather was the Grand Commander, or whatever they call him, for the Knights Templar in the United States. So they sold me at the age of six, and I grew up spending half my life in one of these annexes being experimented on, not really experimented on, but programmed. They were programming me. I was a smart kid, and they were training me really to be a MK Ultra CIA agent. And they put me in a program called, as I got older, they put me in a program called Sex Magic. And the Sex Magic program was developed by Aleister Crowley. Maybe you're familiar with him.
I am.
He was the leading, I don't know what you'd call him, witch, warlock, paranormal beast in the United States in that period of time. And sex magic was his creation. And it's a program where you project sexual energy. But, you know, as a child, that's not sexual energy. You don't have sexual energy. All that nonsense about being seduced by a child is just an adult lie. It was just violence. But mm-hmm. there are methods and techniques of projecting energy into other people to get them to do what you want. And remote viewing was part of the program, and all of this was interspersed with satanic rituals, sacrifices, abuse, because they break up your mind by physical pain, torture, and fear. And you can get that to stop at any time if you give up your soul. So I decided early on that what they wanted was my soul, and they weren't going to get it. And but I think the people that did give up their souls are the people now that are running the country, basically. You've got all these people in the senior executive service, all these unqualified people building airplanes and designing bridges. But they're not really supposed to be there. But they're paid multimillion dollar salaries to like take over companies. And it's my theory that they have taken the people that survived without their souls and put them in the senior executive service. And then if you look, you can look it up. Look up the senior executive service website. They have a website, and they brag about the fact that they run 75 of our government, top government agencies. So our country is being run by this group who came through the MKUltra programming. Not all, of course, but I think probably the people that moved at the top that you look at and you think, that person can't design an airplane, you know, that person can't sail a boat. You know, what is that person, you know, doing being a high level diplomat? You know, that person should be cleaning the toilets, you know. But, you know, how did they get there? I think we're really suffering now from the effects of that. And, you know, I'm sure it's multifactorial, but that's one of the problems. And I escaped when I was 16. I literally stole a car from one of those promotional parties where I was a party favor. I stole a car with the driver passed out in it. So me, him, and his car escaped. And eventually I made my way from California up to Seattle, and in where I had enrolled in the University of Washington early. That's a story. It's all in my book. You can read about all of this in my book, Sparky, Surviving Sex Magic, which you can get on my website, or you can find it on Amazon. Yeah. It's still there.
What is your website?
My website is www.JulietEngel. So it's just my name with nothing in it, just JulietEngel.com.
Perfect.
And you'll find my three books there. And that will tell you a lot about a lot of things. From the University of Washington, that was a big cut in my life. I cut out everything before that. So when I was in college, I couldn't remember anything before getting there. So it was all that life didn't exist, the childhood, the trauma, the torture, the MK Ultra. I became a new person. And of course you start college, you know, and the people you meet care about who you knew in grade school. So
right. It's
a logical time to start a new life. And I got into medical school. I put myself through medical school, internship, and graduated, became qualified as a radiologist and board certified in nuclear physics. Wow. And took all that and became part of the, I was in Seattle at that time. This was the 80s. So I became part of the technology scene with people like Bill Gates and Paul Allen and the people that started Costco. And it was an exciting time. It was all these new startups and back before it was evil. You know, people were very optimistic and high-minded. And in 1990, I was invited became a published specialist and an assistant professor at the University of Washington, and avoided all questions about anything about my history or my past, and was invited to go to Russia on a citizens diplomacy exchange. They were inviting citizens to meet with American citizens to meet with Russian citizens and to start partnerships. And at that time, no one had gone to Russia. It was a completely new thing. So I just had to go. And I went, and it changed absolutely everything. For one thing, I got there, and it was Moscow in 1990, which was the most dismal, dark, depressing, broken down place you can imagine. And yet somehow it felt strangely like home to me. And like the streets were familiar. I could even read some of the Cyrillic, although I had no reason that I knew of. And it was starting to stir up the memories that I'd been going through. I'd actually been, in retrospect, I was programmed at Stanford Research Institute for 3 years to become an agent in Moscow, working undercover for the CIA. And eventually, and I was supposed to get into a specific building and into a specific basement and into the Rostelecom system, which is where all their international communications went through. And I actually got there.
I did.
But by that time, it wasn't there anymore. Of course, it had all been moved out. I was like 20 years too late. And the Russians were saying, like, what do you want to see this stuff for?
And
I thought, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know. It's like they thought it was strange, and I thought it was strange. But it actually makes perfect sense when the memories really started coming. And
may I ask a quick question? Did your memories start when you went into Russia, or did they start coming whenever you were in school and they started coming back slowly? And then when did they start coming back?
They really started coming back in a dangerous way when my daughter was born. So in 1980, I was 31. My daughter was born, and I was holding this little miniature copy of myself and trying to remember what it was, you know, how did my mother, who I couldn't remember, take care of me? And all that came was just this horrible stuff. I mean, it just, and I thought it was something terribly, terribly wrong with me, and that I was going to hurt my child. And that's when I went to talk to a psychiatrist, because I was a doctor and I knew psychiatrists, and I had one that I particularly trusted. And that's, you'll find in MK Ultra survivors, they don't trust anybody. And I would not have trusted anyone, but I did trust him. I knew he didn't have any other agendas, and he would just give me a straight answer. And I went and asked him if I was crazy. And if he'd said yes, I would have killed myself, because I had activated the suicide program. Gotcha. And that's something that Kathy O'Brien and I are going to be talking a lot about in the coming weeks, because the MK Ultra programming only lasts 30 to 50 years. So people start coming out of it. And so I came out of it at the age of 30, but that's because I was holding a little copy of myself, you know.
Right.
It was, you know, and nothing would let me hurt that little thing.
Oh.
And So,
wow. So that started when she was born in your 30s.
Yeah. And that was the big push. And what happened to me, because I didn't understand, you can control the release when you start to have the memories coming and you're starting to have the dreams and you're starting to see things that are bizarre, but, you know, are coming from you. You can control their release. And if you don't, you get what's called flooding, where everything comes at once. And that triggers a very carefully placed suicide program, which is put into all MKUltra participants. And I suspect I'm saying MKUltra, but there's all kinds of variations of cults and covens. And I don't think it's difficult with a very small child to put in a self-hate, self-destruct program. And if you know it's coming, you can deprogram the program.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I didn't know how to do that. And I went through the flooding, but I had my psychiatry friend who helped me through it. And but if that happened, and then the program from the 1960s that was programmed into me was the Freedom Train. And it's like, oh, this horrible stuff's coming. But then from the periphery starts coming this beautiful pink, bright colored train with flowers and bright colored pillows and music and happy people. And you just get on the Freedom Train and you die. And that's it. That's all there is.
Wow.
And I think that's happened to a lot of people, and I think it'll happen to more people if we don't let people know that, you know, when you start seeing the equivalent, whatever is programmed into them, you say, whoa, I know what this is, and we're going to slow this way down.
Slow it down.
Yeah, and yeah. I think the reason that we're going to see so much of this now is that the National Security Archives just released the MKUltra file. So this is a 1,200 pages of unredacted documents in which the CIA confesses to everything. They did it, when they did it, who did it, how they did it. The fact that they used massive amounts of drugs that they experimented with. They were given free rein by the government. And unlimited funding. Yeah, really. Yeah. And no obligation to return results or to care for the people or get permission. So this was done on a massive scale on our population and then denied. So anybody that came forward and said, this happened to me, which I did many times.
Right.
You just get that, you're crazy. You know, that's just, no, you're just a nutcase. And, but now people have the proof. There's the proof. And people are, these documents came out on December 24th, 2024. So they've only been out for, 5 months?
5 months, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not very long.
And you said unredacted. I mean, they're unredacted.
They're unredacted. So they include notes, handwritten notes between the people that were running this. And it includes really shocking things like orders for LSD, which was donated by Eli Lilly to the program because they wanted people addicted to it. So they donated it by the ton of LSD.
What?
And I remember LSD was being handed out like candy. Yeah, there's a lot in there. And the man who was put in charge of it was Sidney Gottlieb. And he was a chemist, and he was the head of technical services for the CIA. And that meant he was the head of chemical bioweapons. For the CIA, this would have been in the 40s. and the early 50s. And then he became the head of technical services, and then he was appointed as the head of the MK Ultra program. But they refer to him in the little notes as the head poisoner of the CIA. And yeah, developing bioweapons. And his specialty was mRNA, which may sound familiar.
And this was back in the 40s and 50s?
Yes, yes. This would be definitely 50s and 60s that they mention it. But, you know, you don't know how long. And their conclusion really was that mRNA isn't good for anything except a bioweapon. And there it is. So there you've got the CIA, unlimited money, access to unlimited mRNA. They have access to
LSD.
And then the MK Ultra programs were run in hospitals and universities and in private clinics. They were run in church retreats, and they describe in there how they would get like an entire floor of a hospital, and no one else in the hospital would know what they were doing, and that's what they did. So, and they're still doing it. So you still got hospitals with a dentist's office and pediatricians, and then a massive torture floor. So,
and we're talking about in the United States, people.
Yes, yes, United States and Canada. Mm-hmm. Canada just started a group in Canada, took these documents, and have started a class action lawsuit for MKUltra survivors.
Good.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It's good. They should. This will help bring the fact that this was done out, and if we can understand what was done, then we can start moving towards fixing it.
Yes. But you are taking that on yourself as a survivor, and I'm assuming that this is how the Underground Railroad was birthed, because you go back to Russia or where we were at, if you want to go there, but pick up where you were and tell me a little bit about that.
Well, back to Russia, I was the first my specialty was prenatal ultrasound. I did a lot of research in it. So they invited me to come and visit their maternity hospitals, which no American had done up until that point.
That's an honor.
It was, but the situation in the hospitals was just so awful. It was birth by punishment. And they had a very high death rate, and they were, I won't go into all the details. It's in both my book, Sparky, and my second book, Angels Over Moscow. But what I discovered from that system is that women were encouraged to give up their children. And because of the poverty and the fact there was no birth control except for abortion, a lot of the children were given up at birth and sent to institutions to be raised. And then from the institutions, there was a massive amount of human trafficking, which I traced out over a couple of years and discovered that it was going on. And when I found a group of children that I'd been helping up in the northern part of Russia on the border with Finland, it was multiple ages, and all the 13 to 15 year old girls were missing. And I found out that they'd been taken on a bus, and the people seemed to know where this bus had gone. I mean, there wasn't a lot of choice as to where you could go. There was only one road. So I took a bus, I followed them. And I followed this bus all the way from northern Russia through Finland up into northern Norway, into Kirkenes, Norway, which is as far north as you could get, and discovered that they knew about the buses. And but when they found the children that had been on the buses, they were dead. And yeah, that was an absolute shock. And they had a drawer full of Polaroid pictures of the faces. And they said, oh, they just gave me this box of these horrible pictures and said, are any of your girls in there? And of course, I couldn't tell. I was just shocked. When I got myself together, went back, because, you know, I should have at least taken pictures of the pictures. They denied they had the pictures. And I can see why. It was a whole lot of trouble for them. But they did admit that they buried the children. If they had found any alive, they would have helped them. And I absolutely believe that. But it just, that did it to me. Anything I had repressed in my own background up to that point was activated, because, and thinking back in my own childhood, all the children that yeah. I had wanted to save, you know, I was always in the situation where children would be sacrificed, children would be killed, children would be killed in snuff films or in Saturnalias. And it may sound like I'm casually talking about this, but it's taken 50 years to be able to talk about it at all. Yeah. But I need to get enough information out to you people to understand what's happening, so that you can stop it. And my question was always, why were they killed and I wasn't? And now I understand that it's because of my family, the fact I was what they would call a bloodline, mm-hmm. and the other kids weren't. And in the mid 60s, you'll find like a little written note in the national security files. They made, one of them wrote to another one and said, you know, we're killing too many American kids. And somebody's going to grow up. One of these kids is going to grow up and sue us because, you know, we have rights as Americans. So they decided to bring in foreign kids. Oh. And I remember in the early 60s, they started bringing in kids probably from all over the world. I don't know where they got all these kids, but they called them all Mexicans. And as if that made it all right. Mm-hmm. And you think now, okay, we just had, what, up to like 300,000 Mexican, they call them Mexican kids being brought across the border and lost in this country.
Right.
And because it's Mexican, you know, that's okay. No, it's not okay.
Not okay. No.
For one thing, it's not okay anyway, but they're also probably from all over the world. They've been kidnapped, stolen, taken from war zones. A lot of Ukrainian children are missing. A lot of kids are missing from Lahaina after the fires. Mm-hmm. Something like over 1,000 children have not returned to school. Where are they? So there's a massive child trafficking operation going on under everybody's nose. And the fact that it can happen at all is because everyone in this country is brainwashed to accept it. So MK Ultra has been used specifically on people like me, specifically on people like, I think, who are running our government now and causing all kinds of problems, but also on everybody, because news media has been controlled, and you're getting subliminal messages all the time. I mean, look at the pharma ads. If you look at the visuals, it's happy people, and it's someplace you really want to be, and it's people look healthy, And if you listen to the words, it's, this is going to kill you. You're going to die. It's like deadly. Your feet are going to fall off, you know, but nobody listens to that. People see the lights, the colors, we're brainwashed.
Give me more Ozempic, but keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. 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 And you'll be thin and beautiful. Not that you'll destroy your gut and kill yourself, but You can eat all the fat you want. And
exactly.
Yeah. We've got things backwards, and we're a lot. I'm sure, as I say, that's not all the problem, but it's a big part of it.
So, I do know on my listening audience is very familiar with, just to help you understand, child trafficking, adrenochrome, a lot. They're open to what you're talking about and understand what you're talking about. DUMS, all of that. And so it's okay for you to continue to unveil and talk about the rescue work that you're doing. How can we help you get involved, or how do people support you? We've still got about 30 minutes or 20 minutes to go, but I still want to get to the point. I know they can buy your books, but how do we get involved to help?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because when I was in Russia, I realized that the human trafficking was going on, I got a grant from UNIFEM, part of the United Nations. And at the, it wasn't that bad then in the 1990s. It still had some good parts, but now they are the premier trafficking agencies through the International Organization of Migration. And anybody that hasn't been on that website should go, where they brag about how they've moved 270 million people in the last year. Funded them, moved them around, brought them across the border. I mean, they're very open about it.
Wow.
But State Department picks them up on the other side of the border. There's contracts. And then they claim, oh, they don't know. They don't know where these kids went. Of course, they know. So first thing I did was to reach out to groups all across Russia. And this is going to sound like it was a very short period of time, but it took years to do this. I got to know women's groups from different regions in Russia. And, you know, it's a huge, huge country. And technology was pretty much non-existent. Nobody had computers. People barely had phones. A lot of villages didn't have electricity. So, I mean, this would be in the mid-90s. I mean, it was a very limited resource time. And if you wanted to get a package or mail or any information to anyone, you couldn't really call them. You'd have to send it by train. So the train conductors had this big business going where they were carrying things to different villages. And that's how everything got around. And amazingly, it did. And George Soros's organization had just hardwired all the universities to the internet. Mm. So, I don't know where that went. But anyway, so we invited women's groups from all over the country to come to the universities' internet centers. And we had a coast-to-coast chat room that ran for 13 hours. And I sat in the headquarters of Glasnost for 13 hours. And that was the internet provider that was connected to the internet centers. And it ran for 13 hours because Vladivostok is 11 hours time difference from Kaliningrad. And we wanted everybody. And as it turned out, we got people from all over the world participating, had a huge amount of information on who was being trafficked, where they were going, what was happening, who was doing it, where the hot spots were, which was basically everywhere. We collected, also had people fill out questionnaires on what was going on. And we got those back and ran them through a computer program in Seattle. And it gave us like 500,000 data points, which was enough to take to the Russian parliament, their Duma, so they could start writing laws against child trafficking, which they did. Yeah. But in terms of this is the bad part. In terms of the our side, the Western side, I was looking at which countries were the biggest receiving countries involved in child trafficking. Yeah. And at that time, actually, we were getting money from the Office of Trafficking in Persons, the tip office of the State Department, to continue this work. And I State Department puts out a report every month saying that there's no trafficking in the United States. We're perfect. We have the best laws. You know, we'll tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And what we found is that the three top trafficking countries were Germany, which was no surprise, but then the United States and Israel, way ahead of everybody else. It was those three. And not unconnected, by the way. So
were you stunned? Were you stunned by that?
I was very surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have been too.
And we had solid data. I mean, names and flights, and I knew that the receivers, the big receivers from all over Russia and Ukraine, were in New York and Virginia Beach. And who they were and how they received them and what flights they were using. And so I had a ton of data. So, of course, I came right to the United States and presented it to the State Department. I presented it at the tip office. I spoke to Congress. I spoke to all kinds of groups. I took it to the UN. I made a presentation they have a yearly women's meeting. So I went and I presented it there. No one would even look at the data. Nothing. It was like I didn't exist and the data didn't exist. And it was amazing. I got smart after a while, and I would go in early and put it on everybody's place. We had posters and booklets and teaching guides that we developed in that period of time. And no one would even touch them or look at it or pretend like none of it was there. No one even picked it up. They'd all gotten the word. And they're still like that. So so this was in 2005, 2006. And in the next few years, we developed, or actually before that, in the late 90s, we'd begun to develop a coalition of organizations all over Russia that were working together to rescue, repatriate trafficking victims. Mm-hmm. So that's that we called the Angel Coalition. Yes. So it was made up of hundreds of tiny, tiny organizations, often two people with or without a telephone. But they could operate in their village and in their area and work with their trusted police, trusted educators, people that they could count on. And they would each have a little media, local media. I mean, tiny village media, but it was still the media of the area. Was extremely effective. And after I'd come and presented all this stuff and been ignored, international police got very involved. So we were working cases in Turkey, Egypt, all over Northern Africa, Tunisia, cases with partners in Israel, because they had a lot of trafficking, but they also had some very good groups working against it. And so by the time I had to leave Russia, because actually we'd gotten too successful and it was causing problems for the organized crime. Plus it was complicated. Read my book, Angels Over Moscow, because it was kind of a wild time. But since I left in 2010 and came back to the United States, I thought that we could do the same thing here. And have found nothing. I mean, I can't get anything. I can't get a reaction from people. Americans will take the data, like 300,000 children documented by the State Department, contracted out to local shippers to take them all over the country, and then nothing. It's like you need follow-up, you need enthusiasm, you need, and there hasn't been any. And So I've written my books. I do talks. I talk on radio and television and give the information, because I know there's a link. I mean, Americans are the biggest hearted, best people on the planet. They have been victimized and have been brainwashed, traumatized by what you see on television. You know, and in Russia, no television. You maybe had a television in a library you had to walk an hour and a half to. So they weren't brainwashed, and they were extremely effective and very quick to link up and get active. But in this country, it's like everybody's brainwashed watching television, as if that is an effect in itself and it actually does nothing. So
through the media, I do believe that we've all been brainwashed. Because mm-hmm. they're all saying the same thing. They're all doing the same thing. And most of the people that we follow in music or on movies or on television, the more recognized people, we'll leave it at that, are out of the program.
Exactly. And they're out of the program. They've given up their soul. And that's why they can lie to you. They can. And lots of times, tremendous promotion and absolutely no talent, whereas the really talented people never get a chance. And that's the reason they can't be manipulated there. They still have a soul. So that's the dilemma we're facing as a country. And I have a friend who really defined this for me when he said he was talking about civilizational states mm-hmm. and how powerful groups of people are who belong to a civilizational state. But our problem in the United States is this isn't an indigenous country for any of us that goes way back. We're not united by thousands of years of history and struggle. You know, we're a melting pot. So we have to define our own civilizational state, which we can do. And Russia has done that. And the reason that Russia is winning the war with Ukraine is that they were smart enough to create themselves in the image of what they wanted to be, which wasn't what they were. But they became a civilizational state, which they all agreed to. Because Russia, like us, was a mix. That's why they call it the Russian Federation and not Russia. It's a mix of 190 different ethnic groups who spoke different languages until Stalin made them all learn Russian.
Right.
And so that always threatened to pull the entire fabric of everything they did apart. And what joined them together was the threat from Ukraine. And even that didn't do it until the Russians discovered the biolabs along the border with Ukraine. And they realized that United States and France and Germany were funding these labs, which were creating weapons specifically to kill Russians.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that hit them like a pie in the face. And it really did change the entire attitude of the Russian Federation. And then I just heard Putin yesterday giving a definition of what Russians are. Mm-hmm. And so they defined that Russia is a Christian nation, and that it's religiously, it has tolerance for all organized religions, that it's law-abiding, that it's kind, generous, love families, love children, all these things. This is not what Russia was 20 years ago, but this is what Russia will be going forward. So I look at that and I think, so how does that apply to us? Well, we're in a mess.
Right.
And the bad news is we're in a mess. Good news is that it's going to be chaotic and threatening enough when the financial crash hits, which is coming.
It's coming.
And people are plunged into poverty, and suddenly all these things, all these goodies that we've taken for granted aren't there anymore. And that includes medicine, you know, sanitation, baby food, all these things that are going to go away. Then when we're really stressed enough, we will recreate ourselves and we'll either turn into total savages or we will recreate what we want to be, you know, right. A civilizational state that we're happy with.
Right. I've talked about that with friends as well. And we probably got about 5 or 6 minutes, 7 minutes, something like that. And it's funny because you're keying it up to a future show I have, talking with friends I have that are gardeners, master gardeners, and talking with what's going on and what's going on in the world. Let's do a show about, you know, maybe you live in an apartment, but, you know, this is how you can grow some herbs or grow some, you know, a tomato plant or work out to where you can have this and trade that and do kind of like a creative co-op to where I have this, what do you have? Let's make dinner and we'll feed our families. And trying to think on the positive side, okay, you know, we're resilient. Let's figure out if something does happen, because as you and I know, it's not looking good for the financial situation right now. And when things happen, supply chains break. And when supply chains break, how are you going to feed your baby? How are you going to feed your animals? How are you going to feed your family? How are you going to keep cool in the summer and warm in the winter? And trying to help people learn how to, okay, beef just doesn't come from the grocery store. You know, you can feed yourself and you can grow some food. Or if you don't have the ability to grow food, maybe you can trade helping to be daycare for somebody and they have food, but they still have a job so they can go do that and you can help take care of the family. And then you guys can, as you said, rally together and come together and reinvent ourselves. So that's a future show I have coming up.
That's really important. And an important element of that is that the first thing that'll happen is the traffickers will move in and start taking people's children's and they will convince people to like put them in daycares or put them in institutions or there's all kinds of ways.
Child, I can make sure your child is fed. I will take good care of your child. And I'm just like, oh.
And then your child disappears.
Gone. Yeah. And so we've got 5 minutes. I don't know if we can even do this or not. But if somebody is triggered by this show or somebody is triggered by, I think I may have some memories coming back and I have no idea. What do they do? Where do they go?
That's a really tough thing because there's very little. It's very little. It's just sort of Kathy O'Brien and me, but we were two of the first ones to go through this. So, I mean, I'm 76, so there's going to be a lot more coming, a lot of more people. The first thing you need to do at this point is to take control of it. Say, okay, I'm getting crazy stuff. I'm not crazy. I'm going to control this. And then start looking for answers. Don't let it get hold of you. And be aware that as that comes up, there's a suicide program attached to it and you've got to turn it off.
Yeah, I think that's good. The people that I listen to and talk to, we're big Q followers. I don't know if you're familiar with Q, but we're big Q followers.
Oh, yes. I was a Q follower. Sure.
Perfect. So he has said that, you know, you command your spirit to take the thoughts in your head and drop them into your heart, because your mind, you can't trust your mind. You've got to be heart-centered and focused and make your decisions through your heart center, because there is a lot of programming out there and they're targeting your mind. And so I believe in that. It's helped me a lot to stay centered and stay focused and stay at peace and I just encourage people. Thank you so much for being on the show. Your information is so good.
Oh, you're welcome.
to go out and get your books. They're fascinating. I just got them recently because I got introduced to you through J.J. Carroll. And so I read the back of the book and I'm like, okay, I've got to get that one ordered. And so it's fascinating the work that you've done on yourself and then the work that you've done to help others. Because a lot of people sometimes when they come out of programs, gosh, as intensive as what you came out of, you tend to just want to stay in, but you have blossomed and reached out and want to help others. And that is admirable and tough. And I can tell you're a tough cookie because you stole that car and you're like, I am out of here. I am gone. And kudos to you. And thank you. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. I want to encourage everybody to please support Dr. Julia. She has been a joy to have on the show. And I really encourage you to go out and check out her books. And then be aware of people in your surroundings that may be going through some issues that may be triggering things, because we're going to be seeing a lot of disclosure coming up, I believe. We're going to be seeing a lot of talk about clones and talk about mask wearing people. And what do you mean that they were taken to Gitmo in 2017 and we've been watching an actor ever since? So I encourage you, I really, really encourage you to stay centered, stay focused, stay in your heart center, and know that we will rally. We as Americans will rally together. And we actually are heard all over the world on this show. So I just want to encourage everybody. We've got some stuff going on over here in the States right now with some riots in our cities. And I encourage you in the United States and around the world, take care of each other, love each other, because we're going to need each other. I love you guys. We love you guys. Thank you again, Dr. Juliet. It's been such a pleasure and an honor.
You're welcome. We'll figure this out.
We'll figure it out. We will. All right, everybody. Thank you, BBS. Go ahead and take it away, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Bye.